Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, it's MC from MC Anime Podcast. Today I have another special guest with me today, Eric Holden. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I am doing pretty well. I can't complain. Tell the audience about yourself, what you do, and where they can find you.
Certainly. My name's Eric Holden. I'm an Atlanta improviser and podcaster. I am the co-host for The Goblin's Corner, a tabletop role-playing podcast devoted to helping DMs and players get better with their games, tell better stories, and build better worlds.
Alrighty. Where can they find you if they want to have any correspondence to see what you do?
We're pretty much on all of the socials, so if you want to find us, it's at Goblins Corner pretty much everywhere. We also have a YouTube channel, The Goblins Corner, and of course, goblinscorner.com if you want to find all of the stuff in one place for easy access.
Gotcha. And further ado, today's title is going to be Dungeons & Dragons Kaiju Designs. So we will be immersing into the giant monster genre that comes from Japan, and basically, instead of putting in the fictional setting that they have in the different kaiju movies, it's going to be reversed. It's going to be in D&D style. And Eric, actually here, runs a lot of D&D. He's going to talk about how these monsters can be scaled up, played in the campaign, like D&D, and everything in between. So, with the first big take of kaiju, we first have to at least go back to the primal origins. The primal origins of kaijus as a concept was first King Kong in 1933, and then the second precursor before kaijus became super big was the Beast of 20,000 Fandoms. That was a dinosaur that was in a nuclear accident from the Arctic, came over, and they had to use an isotope, radiation isotope, to kill it because the blood tabinet in the dinosaur. That feature from that movie inspired Godzilla, which inspired all the other Japanese kaijus.
Now let's not forget the American kaijus as well, such as Them, which was the big giant ants, Night of the Lupus, which was giant rabbits, which you had to kill by having them run into power lines. The 40s to 60s were great times for giant monsters. And, of course, Attack of the 70-Foot Woman. Or is it the 80-Foot Woman? I can't remember.
Ah, yes. That's a good one. So, with kaiju specifically, and the origin of interesting origins for Godzilla, how do you think the mainstream for Japanese kaiju started? Because I know King Kong perpetuated the success of what it could look like, but it wasn't really considered a kaiju fight at that time.
Right. I'm not, I won't claim that I love Godzilla. I have a big shrine sitting in my office to the various movies and stuff, but I can't claim to be like an expert on Godzilla. But I will say that I believe a lot of the kaiju movies stemmed from kind of the fear of natural disasters and wrath of nature. Kind of why a lot of American horror was centered around zombies, because we as a society are very fearful of being reduced to just a mindless number. And so it was kind of a primal fear, and it kind of sparked this trend in filmmaking at that time.
Yeah, and Godzilla is a representation as a metaphor for nuclear explosion that happened as a result in Japan. So it's a metaphor for a giant creature to be mutated from circumstances related to nuclear disaster. What are some other type of disasters that could influence a kaiju being born that you have seen?
Are you talking about movies or just in any, like in games?
Any fashion.
There's lots of ways you could do it. I mean, if you're talking in a fantasy campaign to bring about a kaiju, like the classic kaiju in D&D is the Tarrasque, right? It's a big, unstoppable monster that awakens every couple thousand years to devour everything in its path, and it goes back to sleep. So that could just be a periodic manifestation of nature. There's also more of a mystical connection with nature, which is the Zeratan. Zeratans are, if you don't know what those are, big gigantic turtles the size of islands. In fact, if you guys are curious, Matt and I did a episode called Megafauna, which was about a year back on YouTube, and of course you can check it on iTunes and all the other stuff, where we talked about actually playing having them as encounters or as actual locations you can fight on too. But there's also a lot of other ways you can bring some kind of kaiju to life. For example, magical runoff or just toxic waste. So I go back, going back to Godzilla, right? The smog monster is a good example of that, chemical pollution. But this could be, if you're, again, playing D&D, if, you know, alchemical runoff from the gnomes or dwarves, you could have magical radiation leak, some sort of planar rift is always fun. And of course, just straight up magic, just because. Maybe
the magic origins, like the human turning into a giant monster too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you could have a human, you know, maybe the byproduct of the spell gone wrong or some sort of curse. Curses are great. Elder evils are great. These things maybe existed since the dawn of time and they just happen to wake up and start wrecking havoc, which is always a lot of fun.
Because sometimes the plot to defeat such a monster is maybe not actually defeated necessarily, like, you know, slaying it. It could be subduing it to enough where it goes back fast or it gets weakened, that we can put it back into slumber so it can remain dormant.
Yeah, and if you're running a campaign, and by the way, it doesn't really matter what game you're running. It could be Pathfinder, it could be D&D, it could be, I mean, you could play Shadowrun and have a kaiju come, which would be great, by the way. I'd love to see a bunch of Shadowrunners try to fight a giant kaiju, maybe have cyberware on it or something. But the idea is, you know, you want to check, A, what kind of encounter are we talking about here? Are we talking about a natural disaster? So you could have kaiju as a force of nature. So, you know, in disaster films, for example, you're not fighting against the tornado or the giant wave that's about to hit Los Angeles. You're fighting against the people who are looting and rioting or maybe trying to get away from the natural disaster. And so for low-level campaigns, that's an excellent way to get started with the kaiju. It's just attacking the city. You guys can't do anything. This is way above your pay grade. You might even, as a savvy DM, have heroes fighting the kaiju while you guys are just trying to keep the rest of the populace safe. And that would be an excellent low-level adventure to start with.
Interesting. So that's a multifaceted story with one element being the supporters, while one element also being people fighting it. But so distracting what is the actual mission, because the mission's going to change given where they're at and actually what needs to happen in the city at that time.
Yes. And so that would be what I would call kaiju as event. Then there's one called kaiju as location. So I'll go back to the Zeratan, which is a great example of that. But you can fight on anything. A friend of mine did a one-shot game a couple of years ago where we were inside the Tarrasque, inside its innards, its belly, and fighting, you know, whatever creatures it had swallowed and then the various organs inside the Tarrasque, which is a lot of fun. That was more of like 5th, 6th level, maybe a little mid-range. And you could maybe, again, not directly fight against the kaiju, but you could be on the kaiju itself fighting the denizens of the kaiju that maybe worship it as a god. Or, I don't know, the antibodies inside the kaiju, if it's large enough, maybe you're in its blood cell, right? That would be kind of cool. Yeah. Or even just fighting over the kaiju because maybe an enemy is controlling it. And so that would be kaiju as location. And then, of course, if you are powerful enough, then you fight kaiju as encounter, which is literally just fighting the kaiju. So then you go the range from, okay, now I'm actually fighting this creature. And so you could have various power level and scale it accordingly.
True. And specifically, how does a team combat a kaiju in a kaiju encounter?
So like a high level kaiju encounter? I think they would have to determine what the weaknesses of the creature would be first.
Okay, so going on insight, having an advantage being rolled into the perception of what the creature could be to have a scouting mission first and then figure out from the scouting mission what information you're able to obtain.
Yeah, and you know, again, this is where I go back and say, you know, all role-playing games are a collaborative dance between the storyteller and the people playing. So just to give an example, as a DM, you know, you want to give a little bit of prequel before you actually, you know, the Tarrasque is just going to crop up out of nowhere and start slaying people. Maybe there's some signs, you know, rumbles in the valley. Maybe there's a lot, I don't know, a crack opens up in the earth. Animals start dying because its breath is funky and it's killing things around it. You know, some kind of lead up over time so that the players are invested, they begin researching. And then by the time this thing pops out of the ground and is tearing trees out of its roots, the characters are well prepared and ready to do battle with it. And then that gives the players a lot more incentive, A, to go fight it and not just say, well, see you guys later. We're going to go into the next town that's not being destroyed.
True. And the Pattern of Omens is actually a really good storytelling because it's building up the suspense of what is a threat itself. Not just kaiju in general, but omens as a story mechanism tells what, okay, this is what we have, this is what's going on, we can gather this to make this mission and then potentially find out who we're fighting later.
Absolutely. Another option you can also do, and I didn't mention this, this is like a, for a lower mid-level adventure as well, is maybe the creature's attacking, again, either as location or event. And just like in Cloverfield, like what are those tick-looking things that drop off the Cloverfield monster and begin killing people? Maybe you guys have to fight that. And that would be a lot of fun as well. So technically fighting a kaiju, because it's a giant tick or giant, you know, bug parasite that attaches to the kaiju. But it also begs the question, you know, in an ecology that has a giant monster or maybe multiple giant monsters, maybe there's a mountain cat that literally is a mountain. What kind of fleas live on a mountain cat that is the size of a mountain range, right?
True.
What kind of parasites does it get? If it, for that matter, what does it eat? But that's, you know, by diving a little bit too much into that.
Well, the big range of monsters go back into Greek origins with Titans, where creatures of the old earth, where they were the main dominion before the demisons of gods came in, which is the children of Cronos. So it's interesting. And some of the Titans, is another representation because they're like an ancient creature from ancient times coming in.
100%. And it's good to, depending upon the game you're playing, you know, have some kind of lore like that, you know, from either from the get-go or as you're starting a story, you know, start incorporating some of that lore in there. Yeah, back in the day before the gods, or maybe there was different sets of gods, right? Because, you know, if you look back to just, you know, real world mythology, gods are killing gods all the time, right? Like I said, Cronus got killed off. And,
yes.
You know, there was lots of, you know, murder happened a lot. And so maybe in the time before, there was some sort of titans or sort, you know, titanic creatures, and maybe they just don't exist as much. But there's a kraken lurking beneath the waves. It's giant and its fishy goodness will burst forth one day to consume the world. Or it could be the snake that's chewing, you know, gnawing at the roots of the world tree, right? If you're going on Norse pantheology.
Yeah, if you also go into Norse, you have a big god, the big god Serpent, which is like in the bonds of the earth, but it will eventually come out to do battle. And you have that as a tale for that to happen. You know, classic three-headed dog, you know, power, all that stuff. But I think in the interesting of what, you know, giant monsters are, I think when the oldest, isn't like giants? People emerged giants as this giant creature that came havoc as well.
There are giants in a lot of mythology.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, and then giants be much older than other stuff, or like, you know, like titans and stuff like that.
I'm not sure where they fit in our mythology, but yeah. I mean, in your game, and this is the best part, you know, I always tell people, it's like, however you want to fit them, you know? Here's the thing also, a lot of people take certain story elements in D&D as canon. And, you know, I think that's good in some ways, but in other ways, I feel it's sometimes limiting because one of the best things you could do in your campaign is say, yeah, everybody knows that there's titans living beneath the earth. They could or could not exist. You know, people might know a whole bunch of facts about these creatures that are absolutely not true. Because just like in the real world, people get stuff mixed up, or they make stuff up, or they embellish it because it's more fanciful. And that's a lot of fun to have conflicting rumors regarding a specific titanic animal that might just happen to destroy your town and your game.
True.
So you can throw people different red herrings to get them to go down quests until they realize, oh yeah, nobody knows actually what this thing's about. I gotta go search. Maybe I gotta do a side quest to go down into this dungeon. Now I'm dungeoneering in a kaiju campaign because I gotta find some lore on actual lore on this creature because it's destroying everything in its path.
True. And now another you also have the protector as a role too. So it's like a lot of stories have ancient primordial beings who are guardians of some sort. They only come out through a prophecy coming true, and they're only coming to the rescue if that prophecy is being fulfilled at that time. Now, maybe you have magic being impacted and someone else is controlling this guardian, and it's pretty much you can't do much against the guardian, but you can limit the caster on the guardian as a potential campaign as well.
So this, I really like this idea, and I think that this could be classified as kaiju as MacGuffin. So the story is not necessarily about the actual kaiju itself. It's, again, like an event or a force of nature. You may fight it, you may fight on it, or you might fight some of its guardians, but it's more of a side story than what's actually going on. So a good example of that could be something along the lines of, like you said, there's some kind of epic battle going on. Maybe a wizard's got a magical device that's controlling things, and this guardian comes forth to protect when the conditions are right. Maybe it's up to the heroes to set those conditions in order so that the guardian can come and save the day, which is kind of a cool way to save the day. It's not just the heroes, you know, job. Maybe you're playing like a 6th or 7th level character.
Yeah.
You're not going to be you might save the world, but maybe you're not saving the entire world and you need some help. And the only way to do that is to do X, Y, and Z so that the great guardian, you know, 22nd level, I don't know, dog turtle comes forth with his, you know, he's got shaggy fur and a big old turtle shell, and he wags his tail and the moon flies out of orbit, right? That would be a really cool way to incorporate a kaiju into your story that doesn't necessarily involve fighting it, but actually having it help in your quest.
Yeah. How does the role of Chimera fit in? Like the creature that is Frankenstein of different parts put together and is now being controlled or let loose as a problem.
Those are a lot of fun to add. And interestingly enough, we've done several episodes on chimeras just because my co-host and I enjoy mashing different creatures together in colorful blends. Mm-hmm. I would say you can incorporate any elements that you like for dramatic effect, which is always fun as a storyteller. I mean, why does it have lobster chitin all over it? Who knows, right? Could be magic. You can make a reason up if you want. Maybe it lives under the water. Or you can use it for tactical purposes as well. That's got armor, obviously, and it's got these pinchers to, you know, tear armor asunder. So there's a lot of reasons that you could do it. You can also just make it a simple real-world animal. But I think giving it that fantastical element and kind of taking several animals and putting it in a blender and coming out with something that's not only giant-sized but also fearsome is just a really fun way to make a monster kind of out of the blue. I mean, look at some of the traditional monsters in D&D, like the Umberhawk. It's basically a gorilla and a beetle.
True.
And they have actual chimeras in D&D as well, too, like the traditional chimera, and they've got a bunch of other weird ones. And look at the Chul, for example, which is like a lobster and an octopus and a man.
Okay. So the meshing of chimera is a pretty good fusion element.
I think it's a great way to make a monster.
True. And so that's like some of the stories that we can do with kaijus and different, you know, type of kaiju stories. How does a kaiju in design of scale happen? Like, how do you scale this creature? How big is it within relative to the role-playing aspect?
Well, that's an interesting question to ask, and it really depends on how you decide to use it in your story. So the DM needs to ask themselves a couple of questions. Are my players fighting it, first off? Regardless of whether you think they're going to win or not, is there potential to fight this creature? If so, then it needs to have some kind of way to defeat it. And so that might lower the power scale some, because if you're fighting something that's the size of an island, probably anything you do is not really going to hurt it very much unless you're using high-level magic or a lot of explosives. If it's something giant-sized, when I say giant, like gargantuan or smaller, then that's within the realm of possibility. Remember, the Tarrasque is actually supposed to be gargantuan-sized. They got rid of anything, I think it's, or is it colossal? Can't remember what they had in 5th. But they got rid of like the upper tier size, and everything past that is just big. So, you know, is it possible to kill? If it's not possible to kill, then you've kind of ruled out that this thing is going to be stopped unless you use story logic and not game mechanics. So that's the first question. If it could be killed, cool. Then you got to do a little bit of number crunching and find out how many hit points it has and what its powers are and stuff like that. If you don't want it to be killed, you just want to use it kind of as part of the story element, that's way easier, because then it just isn't killable until it's killable. And so then it dies when the story needs it to die, or it goes away when the story needs it to be. And then it becomes a location or an event. And I think sometimes, particularly unless you're playing like an epic level campaign, those are kind of the most fun, because there's nothing better than fighting on the back of a giant monster. It's just, you know, destroying a mountain range, and it doesn't even, right, it's so big it doesn't even recognize you, but you're fighting the big bad that's on the back of this thing, and it's got, I don't know, some kind of epic level crystals that's kind of floating around the head of this creature, trying to mind control it, and the ritual's almost complete. Yeah, technically you're fighting a kaiju, because you're fighting a guy that's controlling a kaiju, but you're not really fighting the kaiju, right? You can't slay the mountain, but you can certainly slay the guy that's driving the mountain.
Yeah, the Monster Tame was a pretty good classic villain aspect. And archetype, too.
Another option to use kaiju as well is not necessarily as a encounter element, but more as more of like a mystical element. And what I mean by that is you could use one as, for example, a warlock patron or a deity, either semi-divine or just a full-fledged god. Yeah, the gods exist, and in fact, one of them literally is the mountain range over there. It's the mountain cat, and the mountain cat sleeps. But if you walk up to its ear, you can converse with the mountain cat, and it hears your voice, and then you get warlock patron out of it, right? I don't know what a cat god would bestow a warlock, but certainly I could see Eldritch Blast being a bit furrier. Maybe has claws. That'd be kind of cool.
True. And with the stowing gifts and all that stuff, it's on a particular aspect in like the creature, like a gyrification effect. Can that also happen as well? Like it was a smaller size, but turned giant through magic or some other force that made it bigger to scale?
I think that's certainly an option that you can incorporate into your game. That's a good way to kind of, you know, we call that kind of pressing the gas button on an encounter. So you might be fighting this monster, it's big. Let's say it's a bear, right? The dreaded swamp bear that lurks in the swamp, and it's fighting, it's fierce, it gets raging, and then all of a sudden maybe something happens. Maybe because the swamp is magical. Maybe because it's breathed in too much swamp gas, but you see it suddenly enlarge in the encounter. Now it's too big to fight, and it goes off into the distance. Now you gotta figure out what it's gonna do before it gets hungry again. Or it could be, and this is just, again, these are just examples, but you could have it originally start out like the classic kaiju, right? Maybe an experiment went wrong and it escaped from some sort of alchemical laboratory, and now it's running amok and it just gets bigger over time. If the PCs do something about it early on, maybe they contain it. Maybe if the PCs fart around and do a couple of side quests, now it's so big that you can't really do anything about it, and it's just kind of part of the background radiation, so to speak. So there's a lot of ways you can play your consequence of actions in your story as well.
True. Is there like a way to maybe limit the power of the kaiju in a way. Has that been an aspect that's also been intimidating in, if we can lower the power level, we'd be able to do something about it. If we can't lower the power level, then the entire mission is not within scope to finish what we want to do.
Yeah, and that's definitely something, again, you know, you really want to ask yourself as a storyteller, what do you want to get out of this encounter? Do you want it? Do you want the characters to be able to defeat it? Or is this something that you're going to kind of play, kind of ad lib it or improv it as you go along? If you want to defeat it, if you want it to be killable, then you could, the easiest thing to do is just give it real world sensibilities. Okay, it's a giant bear, but guess what? If I chop off the bear's limbs at something that size, it's going to come crashing down. It's not going to get back up, right? Because it's the size of a couple of houses. Well, something that large, when you, you know, lop a limb off, it's not going to be walking around at that point. So, or it suffers enough blood loss that maybe it just dies. And so it may just be you just do enough massive damage or set it on fire and it dies. Another option, of course, is many monsters, particularly fearsome beasties, don't typically have very good intelligence saves or wisdom saves. And so it could just be a simple matter of, I'm just going to mind control it. I think a fun one to consider if it's an animal is, why don't you just try talking to it? You got a druid in your party, hopefully, or a ranger. Okay, speak with animals. Maybe you can diplomance it to stop it from attacking. That would be a fun way. Everybody's trying to kill it. Maybe the entire kingdom's got an army against it. And this one lone druid comes out with a carrot. And he's like, don't worry. The dire horse will be gone from the kingdom very shortly. And it just talks to the horse like, look, man, I know you're pissed off at all these guys. I get mad at him too. I turn into a horse occasionally. Maybe he does. And then all of a sudden they got a fine friendship. And then now it becomes a guardian. And that would be a really interesting way to defeat the creature as well, without any combat involved and without any power scaling or worrying about it.
Yeah, true. So in order to defeat campaigns, you can design the characters to be imminent to the threat that needs to be dealt with. But how do you deal with a threat that's not like an anti-hero? It can go either way.
Well, with an anti-hero, it would still be solving the problem as well.
Yeah.
Now, there is another option that is fun. Savvy players will oftentimes look at how powerful they are and compare it to their beast that they're fighting and go, you know what? I could potentially take this in a fair fight, or I might die, but it'd be a lot easier to just trick this thing. And so that might be a fun way for an anti-hero to, you know, defeat the creature. So I'll give you an example. Traps are always a great way to kill a giant monster. We'll go back to Night of the Lupus, right?
Yes.
Giant rabbits got electrified on the power grid. All right. You know what? I've got Move Earth. It's a cantrip. Or maybe I've got some higher level spells to open a crack in the ground. And I also have illusions to cast over the ground. Well, look, this is a dumb beast. It's going to come rampaging at the city. It doesn't know that there's a 500-foot cliff that it's about to fall over. Takes enough falling damage, you won't have to worry about it. One hit kill.
True. Or you can trap it, and then you only use temporaries to do the piece. And then once it escapes, you have to deal with it again. So that it could be either way.
And all of the kingdom's oil in one fireball can solve your problems.
True. So that's incorporating the scaling. How would a party stack up to defeat them? Are the players dividing amongst themselves? Is it always the case that you have the perfect party for that beast? Or is it like lots of engineering or leveling up along the way to maybe defeat that beast?
It's a good question with the players. You know, you really can't predict a perfect party in any game. You know, you might have two people that are playing. You might have six people that are playing. You might have all rogues playing, which would be kind of fun. Or you might have a couple of crunchy wizards and, I don't know, the one guy that has a sword. So, you know, your players are going to have to do a little bit of brainstorming, which again is why I would stress that this is a ramp up event, because that way it gives the players a little bit of time to work with their strengths and weaknesses. If you have a heavy martial party, that might be great to go against some of the smaller beasts. But again, if you're up against something that's the size of, you know, a small town, hacking it to death may not be an option. Sure, you could do it, but you'll be there for a few weeks before you break through the skin. And so magic might need to be involved. You know, and it really just comes down to what are the players, what are their strengths, and then how do you defeat it? It's just like any other challenge in a game. You know, you're going to have to research it, look at your strengths. You can trap it, try to kill it, you know, beg it to stop fighting. You could even, if you're a party of bards, sing it to sleep. That would be kind of fun. Or convince other nations to go kill it. And there's a lot of options to defeat a large creature.
Now, within the physical realm, movies and TV shows with giants, how do they compare to maybe a D&D style kaiju?
Well, I would say first, most of the monster movies that, at least that I've seen, don't have a lot of fantastical elements to them, except maybe like some of the Mothra ones, which is kind of getting a little spiritual, and the new Godzilla cartoons, which were actually really good, if you haven't seen them. You know, none of them use real world physics. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I think somebody did the math on Godzilla, and it's sort of impossible for Godzilla to actually even exist in our world. And so you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt as to things stack. I will say, like, in D&D, at least, there aren't as many super giant monsters that you see in, like, the kaiju movies. They're usually more on, you know, the size of a house, slightly larger than that. I think the Tarsus is pretty big. You know, but then again, so are ancient red dragons or a celestial dragon in Spelljammer. I think that's probably the largest creature that exists that I'm aware of. But that doesn't mean you can't make yours even bigger. Again, it's your game. You can make it as big as you want and as powerful as you want.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of myths and legends have giant creatures as either source of power. They're evil. They're just forces of nature by themselves, or a combination of introduced or man-made to be part of the antagonist's plot. They don't have to be the main antagonist. They might be just fighting the distance. And the person you're fighting now is, I don't know, trying to bring on an age of monsters. Maybe that's the case. So, I mean, it just depends.
And that would be a really interesting scenario as well. Again, you know, and what are the big bads trying to do? I'm trying to end the world. I'm trying to become a lich. I'm trying to attain massive power. Maybe I'm trying to do all three. I think an option that you could definitely consider is I'm going to resurrect this giant monster to destroy stuff for me. Or, like you said, have an age of monsters, which would be kind of cool. This could also be the prequel for exploration campaigns. So what I mean by that is one of the things that the recent Godzilla movies have was, particularly Godzilla versus King Kong, was exploring kind of the universe, the world below our surface of our Earth, kind of goes down into the Earth. That would be kind of neat to explore sort of like a hollow Earth theory in one of your games.
Well, yeah, you have a hollow Earth, but you also have lots of, like, the salvage. A lot of land where dinosaurs exist. And, you know, these salvage world aspects pretty much have been untouched for years, and the hollow Earth has also been untouched. So if you somehow discover this passageway into this world, time is different and the geology is different, you can really mess with how the perception of one world meets the other and how the world that you just discovered can danger the world above, or, you know, dimension wise too. What do you deal with, dimensional kaijus, like aliens or giant creatures like that?
Well, definitely, you know, if you're talking about like aliens and dimensional creatures, I'm thinking like Far Realm, Great Old One type.
Well, also Ultraman too.
Yeah, you could do something like that. I think also, you know, it's always great to explore the planes in terms of just the, you know, if we're looking at like the cosmic wheel, outer planes, you've got anything from giant robots. So Mechanus would be great for a giant robot, Ultraman. Or you could do some kind of horrifying, terrible monster from the abyss that spawns forth, or a giant demon from the nine hells. But I also think it would be kind of cool to explore things from other places. So anything could come out of limbo, because it's primordial chaos. I personally think a giant Slod would be a great kaiju in his Cloverfield goodness spawns extra slots popping off his back like a gremlin when you throw water on him. Explore some of the realms that maybe people don't think about a lot, like Carcery, which is the prison plane. What kind of creature that would be a titanic monster could exist in that? Maybe something that traps you in its ribcage and slowly eats you. Or even some of the celestial realms would be a lot of fun to explore. You know, they don't have to be bad kaiju. Can you imagine a massive pink elephant?
True. giant creatures. It's been a focal point of a lot of different things. Lion turtles have been mainstream in some shows. Giant elephants is also there. They're just down endlessly walking for hundreds of years, a thousand years. And they've been around since the very beginning, and typically they're only really like one aspect of that story. They're just there. But you can have them there and incorporate them as part of the story, and not necessarily, you can have a pretty minor role. Or maybe they're introduced and have a major role later on.
Yep. So a couple questions to think about. I go back on improv again. You know, if you've established that there is a giant monster kaiju of some sort in the outer planes, if that was true, what else is true? So go back to that old school rule. What else is true about that? Well, it could be that there's an analog on the, you know, diametrically opposite side or analogous side of the planes. Or it could just be that maybe just giant things exist everywhere. And that's always a nice yes and that you can add into your campaign. Maybe instead you could say this is a one-of-a-kind unique thing. That also is totally doable too.
Yeah. Has there been any powers with the deity players? Like in the party, to be able to conjure something of a giant size of some sort?
Nothing that I'm aware of in the books on this scale, but that doesn't mean that you can't have that. So one of the things you could do is, you know, instead of making it just like a 9th level spell, you could do some sort of 10th level magic ritual thing, right? So it might be, I've got to cast these 5 spells in order, expend this much time to produce this one effect over, I don't know, like a month. And that might be kind of a neat thing to, again, to lead up to, or maybe something the players do. Again, maybe the big bad is threatening the world. There's a zombie apocalypse. The only thing that can defeat it is the zombie squasher, which is a giant bunny that just stamps down on all of the zombies. And so they go on an epic quest to find the 5 elements, earth, air, fire, water, and heart, to put this bunny back together, and they summon it from the plane of goodness.
There you go.
Yeah. And that would be a really neat thing to do. What a cool reward to give your players. Maybe because the giant bunny comes forth, everybody gets a lucky rabbit's foot, and they get, like, I don't know, for the next month, they get an extra reroll once a day. So that's kind of like a location-based boon that they could have.
Okay. Or
maybe they get a symbol of a rabbit foot on their arm or something like that, that they can, like a magical tattoo that they can call upon to do expeditious retreat once a day. Again, you can use this as an event to bestow gifts to your players, or maybe they screw it up, and instead of the lovable bunny that pops forth, the evil vampiric bunny from the outer dimension bursts forth instead, and now the world's destroyed. How are you going to live with that? Maybe you got to work extra hard to summon the good bunny.
True. What do you think about Avatar as like bringing forth energy, reflecting your own will to take shape, to do battle? You ever thought of anything like that?
So like the airbending type idea?
Well, you're like, not necessarily, you have an astral plane where your outer body is the avatar, you inside the avatar fighting as you are, that type of stuff. Like a dimensional being made of energy, but it's taking shape, and you can maybe make it giant.
That'd be an interesting way to run a game. Yeah, I think definitely that merits, you know, thinking about how you could put that into a campaign. I mean, that would be good for scaling, so maybe it starts out small and just gets bigger and bigger the more powerful you get. An alternate way to look at it is maybe eventually you try to attack it on your home plane, which would be the astral. Now you're fighting this titanic beast in an epic battle, which would be a lot of fun. where even the dead gods lie.
Okay, that could be interesting. With the play style of D&D, do you think it's fast or is it more slow to the point where they can take the time to do the pacing for it to figure it all out?
So it doesn't really matter. This is the thing I've learned over the years playing many different games, whether they're White Wolf games, D&D games, GURPS, Rifts, and so forth, like all of the multitudes. It really comes down to you as a storyteller and then your players on timing. And so, you know, it should never be like an antagonistic situation, me against the DM, particularly fighting epic level creatures and stuff like that. Like, you want to make a really cool story because the whole reason you're playing this game is because you're playing with your friends and they're the heroes. If they weren't the heroes, you wouldn't be playing this game. You would be playing something else, like, I don't know, Monopoly or something like that, right? And so you want to tell the story in a way that your players can either eventually figure it out or don't figure it out. You know, screwing up also is just as much fun as winning the day if you play it right. But you do want to give some opportunity. And so there is a little bit of dramatic elements in that that you have to scale. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you want to give some hints. If they don't figure it out, you know, that's really up to you as a storyteller. Do you want them to figure out, or is it more interesting that they've messed up? And all of the signs were there. I mean, literally the sun got swallowed, and yet you guys still just were goofing off doing nothing. Well, now it's Ragnarok, you know, the wolf has swallowed the sun, and you got to go kill that wolf. So now what are you going to do? And again, that's a nice lead in as well. But, you know, you should always give them at least a partial chance to give them an out. Because otherwise, it's not as fun.
True. And I think within storytelling, you can create those elements that will give them that option. Now, if, you know, let's say they are goofing around. Well, what you just did was introduce a way of foreshadowing what mistakes could have been and what they could have done. And now they had to play catch up with whatever the mistake was that made them lose a bunch of time, preparation, and maybe, you know, in that time period, they're not going to have the necessary resources they want to have building it up. So maybe they have to think of a way to downplay the situation. Instead of the worst happening, maybe we minimize it for at last the worst bad option.
It's possible. It's also kind of fun to, so the players are goofing off. And I'll just give a scenario that actually happened in a couple years ago in a game I ran. So we're running this game. My players were goofing off there in a bar. And this monster's attacking the city, like nearby dock area of this city. And they keep goofing off. They're like, well, it's not our problem. Well, it certainly becomes their problem because it has now gotten quite large and quite magically enraged. And so it's probably the size, I don't know, like a dinosaur, like a T-Rex or slightly larger. Well, they could have had time, if they were savvy players, gone through the armory, gotten the weapons necessary to fight this encounter and defeat it. But instead, they were hanging out at the bar goofing off. So all they have is the elements at the bar. Now, you might think, well, looks like this is a total party kill. Instead, our players, being savvy creatures that they are, decided that they were going to get this monster drunk. And so they ended up using all of the elements in the bar. And I thought this was fantastic. As a storyteller, I was totally like, oh, yeah, we're totally doing this. How awesome. How are they going to defeat it? I got nothing but booze. All right, then it shall have booze. They figured a way to shove a funnel down this dinosaur's mouth and got it hammered and defeated the encounter. Hilarious, right? And they wouldn't have done that if they weren't messing around and not paying attention like they should have. So sometimes the consequence of action, even though it looks pretty grim, if you've got players that, you know what they're doing a little bit, or at least mildly creative, you can come up with some fantastic stories. And how much better is that? They wouldn't remember that monster that attacked the town if they were just traditionally fighting it with spell and sword. No.
They don't remember because they got drunk on their watch.
They got it drunk.
They would eat it.
They got it so drunk that it fell into the river and drowned. Awesome. There you go. They're going to remember that for years.
And then it's like, yeah, we had a drunk campaign. We made it about to go drunk. Oh, God. Yeah, that is one way to fight it. You know, using something that will gain you the advantage, but in a way that you guys could do. You know, the the person that's in the foot, well, you know what you could do to the foot, instead of maybe as a giant foot going by, you can trip that foot. Or you can snare the foot when the, you know, potential limb is gone and then I move as much so you can come in and take it on from another angle.
Absolutely.
So what is your favorite giant-sized creature that you love using or love diving into the depths of exploration, fantasy, all of that?
So it's one I created. So you've probably heard of the Flumph in D&D, which is a lovable little floating, farting, mushroom-looking creature that helps people in dungeons. Slightly, mildly psionic. So I've come up with the Majestic Sky Flumph, which is an island-sized flumph that lives in the elemental plane of air that the djinn and various creatures who, you know, journey into the elemental plane of air land on, and they use them as floating cities. In addition to that, the Majestic Sky Flump is quite large, but also instills a mildly psionic healing effect for all of those who land on its plush, tender skin, which I believe feels very much like a love seat. You know, like I could see them, like, imagine walking on a love seat, you know, like a leather love seat. That's probably what it would be like to walk on a sky flump. And so it, for me, is more of an encounter or a location, because they build castles and stuff on it, than an actual creature. But you could fight that thing. You could definitely damage it if you wanted. Although, what black-hearted soul would dare kill a giant, lovable pillow that size? Who knows? And maybe that's...
Yeah, that reminds me of the archetype giant sea turtles. Giant lion turtles of legend that were in Avatar: The Last Airbender. They made cities on top of these giant turtles, and these the turtles are the ones that gave them bending in most aspects. So they had power, and they were protectors to go into the city, but then when they moved away, and, you know, these people had the spiritual gifts of the elements, they didn't necessarily need the blessing of the turtle anymore to go leave the city, because they didn't need that because they had the protection that the blessing of the turtle gave them to be able to go away. But I think in retrospect, really what you have is different imagination and how the role of kaiju-size-esque monster can really play out. It doesn't always have to be a violent version. It can be a good version. It can completely be Switzerland. It's completely neutral. Doesn't want to get involved. But it'll give you insight. Maybe this insight will give you answers to a potential solution that you're not to face another creature. Or maybe just the world like, hey, if you complete this quest for me, you will get a reward. But you only get the reward if you complete it within this month's time frame and give it to me. And I desire.
Yeah. Giant monsters or kaiju can be creatures that you can communicate with or fight. They can be locations. They can be just environmental forces of nature. Or they can be, you know, just elements of your story, however you play it.
True. So what are some, before we close the episode, what are some concluding statements you want to give to the audience about Dungeons & Dragons with kaiju designs?
So a couple of things to think about, as I mentioned, is, you know, when you're throwing large monsters or large creatures into your campaign, think about, A, you know, what kind of elements make a fun encounter for your players. Also, you're throwing a large creature into your campaign. How does this affect the localized area? If it is a relatively mild-sized kaiju, like a couple houses in size, that could do some significant damage, but not anywhere close to something the size of a mountain range. So think in terms of scale and consequence of action. What would happen if something like that died? So a good example of that is kaiju number 8, where the dude cleans up all the kaiju that get killed, and it's just massive amounts of dead flesh rotting everywhere. That's, I always think about kaiju number 8 when I throw that into my game, because that's something to think about, right? If that is true, what else is true? There might be an entire ecosystem where people are going out and hunting kaiju down, because that's meat for an entire season, for an entire town, you know? how do you want to have this encounter? You could, it could be comical, it could be fun. How does it fit with the rest of your story as well? Is this just like a one-shot thing, or is this a greater part of a larger story arc? And then what are the myths and legends surrounding this giant monster? Because if it's something this big, there's going to be a story about it someplace in your world. So think about that.
That actually reminded me of the Beast of the 20,000 fandom. The dinosaur had poisoned blood. So when they shot at it, it would spread all the blood, so that instead of getting the blood, they don't want to deal with more. They were doing a radiator isotope that would eat away at the contagion, but eat away from the dinosaur from the inside. So that's how they would feed it, because of the poison. Well, not the poison blood, but the contagion that came from the blood. It spread disease. So it's interesting that you brought that up. That just reminded me of that. I think within the given scope, what Kaiju can give, understand the role it plays. What is it given to the story? How are you writing it in a way that it's beneficial to you? But also think of where it came from, how it came to be. If it came to exist at all, if it's just a random event. And if it's a random event, guess what? Spontaneous events can happen in whatever time, and you can just have loose logic and continuity to connect it. It could be just a one-off encounter, but you know that one-off encounter can be really strong, giving you a potential storyline that can be in a one-shot, or a particular aspect that is no longer involved, but you could use other elements to inspire another story. And that's what I think giant monsters specifically can give. Is necessary not them being a monster, but what is the purpose of this monster itself? But yeah, that wraps up this episode of Dungeons and Dragons Kaiju Designs. Where can they find you for correspondence and if they like your D&D style?
Like I said, we're on all of the players, so you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, all of the social medias at Goblins Corner. Feel free to hit us up at our YouTube channel as well. You can contact me directly there, or goblinscorner.com for all of the things, and info@goblinscorner is our email address if you want to chat with us at some point.
And let's wrap up this episode of Dungeons & Dragons Kaiju Design. Thank you for being here, Eric. It was nice to have you. It was definitely more interesting than the one I was originally going to do for this topic. However, this is more fun, and I love D&D. It was a perfect match.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Bye, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.